And with that, Alan, please lead us through tonight's deck.
Okay, thanks very much, Chris. Okay, we have the first slide up there, and I'm going to move along, and we'll go to some topics that questions that came in much earlier, and we made a list, and we've started going through them. So the ones that are struck out in red, we've already done. And one of the ones tonight is, do I need a VPN, a virtual private network? And the answer to that is, of course, it depends. There are kind of good things about VPNs and not so good things about VPNs. So basically, you get an extra layer of security, and especially if you're in a coffee shop or somewhere where you're using a public internet service. And the other thing you can use it for is to unlock websites that are geo-blocked. So you're not allowed to see it because you're in Canada and there's a block for anybody who's outside of the U.S., for example. And quite often you can work around that geo-blocking by setting up a VPN and using a server nominally in Miami or somewhere. But there are also downsides. You have to be careful that you don't take too much for granted. VPNs do have a bunch of limitations. And the main thing, you have to trust the VPN provider, because you're sending all your traffic to the provider and hoping that he's going to encrypt it and not play around with it. Another downside is it's usually non-free. There are some free ones, but they tend to have very limited features, and it can slow down your internet access and possibly even lock some online accounts. So there are good things and there are bad things, and we have talked about it before. Chris did a quick look at VPNs way back in 2020, and Bob Walker's talked about VPNs at Q&A a couple of times. And there are the references to the various presentations. So, and if you want to know more about VPNs, I recommend that you go back to our previous discussions. And the second item on the agenda was a question about Windows 11. Where do I find programs such as Windows accessories? And not having access to Windows 11, I posted this question in the members forum. And we have an answer courtesy of Harvey. And basically, you'll remember that in Windows 10, when you went to the start menu and dug through the menus, there were a whole bunch of Windows folders with Windows accessories, with Windows administrative tools, and so on and so on. And apparently, Windows 11 has essentially combined all of these utilities into a folder named Windows Tools. So if you go to the start menu, look for a menu item for Windows Tools, or you can get to it by going to the control panel, the system and security tab, and then again, you get to Windows Tools. So I imagine this is another one of Microsoft's forays into consolidating all of the stuff that they have all over the place, which is a good thing because it's really hard to find something. So if it's true that all of the system utilities are now in Windows Tools in Windows 11, then I suspect that's a good thing. Okay, so thanks, Harvey, for coming up with that solution. I don't have Windows 11, so I need a bit of help there. Okay, next on the agenda is something that we had to postpone from last week for lack of time. So Tom Trottier is going to give a presentation on his favorite podcast player called Podcast Addict. So, Tom, are you going to unmute your microphone and screen share?
I guess I could do that. Screen share. Yes. Okay, do you see that?
Yes.
We see some fish.
Oh, well, that's not what I wanted. That could have been worse, though.
Oh, here goes.
Okay. Your screen. Screen 4. Whoops. Okay. That's not right either.
Now we see Podcast Addict.
Oh, okay. Well, then that's what you should be seeing. Okie dokes. So what is Podcast Addict? It is an Android podcast app. It's the most popular one. It's very configurable. You can set it up a lot of parameters by podcast and for the whole program. You can have it read back to you slowly or quickly. You can skip the intro or the extra to avoid the ads. You can skip inside the podcast by amount that you specify. For example, in the Security Now podcast, their ads are 5 minutes long, so you want to skip forward 5 minutes, even though you probably only want to go backwards about 15 seconds. It also handles chapters in big podcasts like The Economist, which is 7 hours. You can update podcasts on a schedule from every 30 minutes to every day. And you can save listen to podcasts for a day, unlisten to podcasts for a customizable period. And you can bring them back pretty easily. So now you're asking, perhaps some of you, what is a podcast? Podcast is an audio file to be played, usually after downloading. Many radio shows have a podcast version, but there are lots of individuals and companies do too. An example of an individual podcast would be RV Navigator, which has been going on for the last, since 2007, I think. Often there are ads before, within, or after an episode if it's coming from individuals, companies, or media. So CBC Radio has ads in their podcasts, but ABC Australia does not. I guess they're richer than us, or at least richer than our CBC. Most podcast episodes are anywhere from 2 to 30 minutes, but they can be indefinitely long. So Podcast Addict. This is the main menu, and on the right you can see the immediate choices, alarms, which I never use. Player, which is set on the thing, the playlist, and this is 174 hours, 19 minutes, and 21 seconds. That's how much I have basically downloaded already that's on my playlist. So I'm behind, as you can see. There's a download manager, which you can use, which I use now and then to restart downloads mainly. There's a recycle bin, because once you delete a podcast, that is a podcast episode, it stays in the recycle bin for 24 hours, which is configurable until you get rid of it. There's new episodes, a list. I have 21,000 apparently in there. Recent episodes, downloaded, bookmarks, et cetera, et cetera. Playback history, playback and product. You can even have a statistics thing, which you can specify. I ask how long you've been listening to different podcasts or the whole thing. So the playlist, this one, is updated as new episodes download. Recycle bin is for listen to podcasts. New episodes means unlistened to. Unlistened to podcasts are deleted after user specified period, and there's an index to every podcast downloaded or indeed the if you've if you've actually downloaded the episode list, that's also done in the index. The playlist is the thing I use the most often. Basically, it's populated as episodes are downloaded. You can see here the length of how long it is. And currently, it started. And there's 11 minutes and 34 seconds to go, which is a minus sign. So that's the time left. This is 18 minutes long, 16 minutes and so on. So you can see the length of it. You can sort this in various ways. You can set up priorities. So the podcasts you want to listen to the podcast can be put at the top. And this is my usual way to listen to episodes. Okay. So you can, this is a list of the podcasts rather than the downloaded episodes. And there are a variety of podcasts that I listen to. You can turn off or on new downloads. If you go to the plus sign here, then that's the way you add new podcasts. The eye will hide podcasts that I guess you're not subscribed to, I believe. You can sort by various parameters. So that's a list of the podcast. As you can see, you can also list the number of episodes and whether you're currently set up to download them. The star, you can favorite things. The time on the right is how many hours old it is. So this was last downloaded an hour ago. And down at the bottom, it's 14 hours ago. And for the different podcasts, this is the information you can display, which is basically given by the podcast. You can subscribe or unsubscribe with this button. There are a lot of episodes for The Current, well, almost 3,000 of them. This is the most current one, was almost a gigabyte. It happens twice a day. And there's other information that's done here, and there's one you may also like. This is the one I've been playing, I presume, Reasons for Optimism. But that's information of that particular episode. And it will actually show, you can go to reviews and so on. Now, if you're playing a podcast, you can sit backwards or forwards with these things. If you click on here, it just goes to the next episode of a podcast that's in your playlist. If you long click it, then it deletes it and goes on to the next. So you can adjust the audio here. You can see this 1.4 at the top. That's how fast I usually listen to this podcast at. And most podcasts I listen to at accelerated speeds, but you can slow them down as well, especially if it's in a language you're not really fluent in. You can set a sleep timer, you can favorite it, you can share it, and there's more in the dots here. Here's an equalizer, so you can change the equalization of it. There's a volume boost, which you can put in if you click this thing. You can change it to mono if it's stereo and you want to hear it in mono. Now, in the episodes, this is for this particular podcast, The Current, Reasons for Optimism. There are, it'll list all the current episodes and when they were last downloaded 13 hours ago, one day ago. The green check mark means that you've already listened to that. And the eye at the top will toggle whether to show the ones you've already listened to or just show the ones you haven't. Now, the episode list commands are very customizable. You can display the podcast in a grid or a list mode. You can do a variety of things with regard to the episode list as to what you want to show and so on. By the way, if there are any questions, please.
There's one from Natalie, which I think is basically in with what you're talking about right now, I think. She says, is there a way to get the categories for sorting versus what is assigned? I mean, control the categories.
There's, as far as I know, there's no way to control the categories. They actually do give you a list of categories. I don't cover it here, where you can get a playlist for a particular category. But the categories are given by, I presume, the originator Podcast Addict.
Okay.
But you can set the priorities of your podcasts yourself. And there's 255 levels. So
wow.
So you can it's very fine-grained if you want it.
Okay. That's all the questions so far.
Okay. Episode info. This is for this particular episode. We continue our Reasons for Optimism, blah, blah, blah. So the downward arrow shows that it's already downloaded and it's available to play right away. At the bottom of many pages are the controls relating to the current podcast. So this shows up at the bottom of a lot of pages within Podcast Addict. Now, podcast controls, these are things you can control for the current podcast. So you can change the download settings. You can override the player settings, which is that, for example, the equalization, the volume boost, and so on, or the seconds, or anything else for that matter. Playlist settings, automatic cleanup. You can change the share settings, which I only do this once in a while, so I've never looked into this particular thing, but you can automate it. And here are the player controls. You can use an external player. I always use the internal one, so I haven't played with any other players. You can choose your player engine, which again, I haven't played with that. But here I have the jump backwards and jump forwards, that fast forward and the fast backwards buttons before. You can change here whether you want what particular set you want. Skip intro, CBC, who creates the current. I usually skip the intro here for about 32 seconds to skip the ad at the start. And skip the outro, so you can skip the credits if you want. I haven't set it here. Use the global setting, which is zero for me. And automatic rewind. So when you restart, it goes back about 5 seconds, so you're not totally lost. And you can set podcast by podcast, but these things can also be set in general as a default for a player for where you haven't set anything special for a particular podcast. Now, there are some big podcasts. I recall seeing one or two others that had chapters, but none of them as long as The Economist. So The Economist is 7 hours. This one is 7 hours, 5 minutes, and 22 seconds. So if you want to navigate in there, but fast forward or go back, it would take a while. Plus, you may not be interested in everything in The Economist. So you can go down and you can click those things there and choose which chapter to start playing at, or you can go back and re-listen to a chapter if you wish. So these are very handy for a very long podcast, and I wish you probably have seen on YouTube they have chapters now in many of their the YouTube videos, and this is like that, so you can choose the particular chapter you want. And does it say how many chapters? Yeah, there's 85 chapters. This apparently is an incremental timer. When you're actually playing it, I'm surprised, actually. Here's the time of how long it actually is, each chapter on the right side. You have a sleep timer. You can set it to a variety of minutes. You can have it to set a stop at the current episode or the current chapter if you want. And that's how you can go to sleep, listen to a podcast instead of the seashore or nice music. So what worth is our podcast or Podcast Addict? Well, Podcast Addict is very configurable, general and per podcast. It indexes your subscribed podcast, so you can actually choose. You can actually look at them. You can put in a search for podcasts. You can podcast when you look for a podcast. You can actually when you put in a in the search term, you will get when you search for a podcast for a particular podcast that you may or may not have downloaded or you're not subscribed to. Then you can, if you put it in the search term, it will this index that this guy provides will let you search for anything within podcast and episodes. And I think including the text. So that's very valuable if you're looking for a particular topic that you want to look up at. So it's a supplement to ChatGPT and Google. I have made several bug reports and suggestions, and the developer always responds. And so why listen to podcasts? Why use Podcast Addict? To control what you listen to and when. So you can listen to podcasts while you're driving on errands or to work, for those of us who work. You can listen faster or slower depending on the content, and you can change that on an ongoing basis. You don't have to go back to the settings. You can change that whenever you want. You can go back to previous episodes easily or previous chapters. Search out new podcast episodes, and you learn better orally, especially if you're doing the dishes or something like that. Are there any questions?
Just a comment, I guess, from Natalie. Live streaming is a good option versus downloading all episodes if you have limited storage space and have access to the internet while listening.
Yes, you can actually. There is a way to listen to radio shows on this as well, live radio shows. I have never done that. I use radio.garden on my computer rather than that, or radio.garden in a browser to listen to all kinds of radio stations around the world. But you can listen. It does have the ability to listen to live radio in here as well, but I don't use it for that.
No other questions in the chat. Comment from Bob Harris. Podcasts are great. Love them.
Tom, it's Corrine. Very nice summary. What do you think the Podcast Addict is scraping based on what you're putting in there? Are they keeping that information? Are they selling it? Do they even tell you what they're doing with
the information? I haven't looked at his privacy policy, or if I did, it was a long time ago. It's an individual developer. I don't think he's selling any of that. I paid it's ad based, so they do show ads. But I paid the $5 or so at the several years ago to get rid of the ads. I don't think he's selling anything. I haven't looked for the privacy policy on it though. You can look that up in the page in the Play Store to see what his privacy policy is.
Okay, thanks very much, Tom. I don't see anything else in the chat right now. So our next option is going to be from Bob Harris, who apparently has taught his dog how to clean up pitches. Is that right, Bob?
You have to unmute yourself to that. There we go.
Very good. Thank you.
Are you going to share screen?
Here it comes right now.
Okay.
And let's see if we got that. Are we there?
I'm seeing the standard edit view, not a...
Very good.
There we go.
Okay. I'd like to share with you tonight a free AI-powered photo editing web tool called Clean Up Pictures. Set my screen size properly here. And I'm going to hide my control bar. Very good. Okay, here we go. We all know the feeling. You've just taken a good photo, a great photo of a good friend. Then you realize, you get home, there's a giant bird feeder in the way. Oh no, what do you do? Well, don't worry. The future of photo editing has arrived. A great photo ruined by a giant bird feeder? No problem. Just Google clean up pictures. So what is clean up pictures, you ask? It's an AI-powered magical genie. It'll whisk away any unwanted object in your photos faster than you can say Photoshop. Wave your wand and your photos will look like $1 million. So it's a website, and cleanup.pictures. This is the website. As it says on the website, remove any unwanted object, defect, people or text or plural in your pictures in seconds. And what you do is drag your object, your image on here. I'm going to show you tonight how to edit two photos. And the first one you already saw. Here we go. So there's a photo of a friend in the backyard. and there's a giant bird food in there. We simply use our green brush, and we cover the bird feeder with green. We're getting farther up, a little more, and before you know it, poof, it's all gone. Yes, it really is that easy. And the background fills in with the AI just the way it should. Now, allow me to introduce you to a good buddy who was kind enough to allow me to use a photo of him picking crab apples. Now, I know what you're going to say. That's a great shot, but what about the pole and all the wires? Don't worry. Clean up pictures will get rid of that in mere seconds. So we go to the website, upload our photo. Now we use our mouse to control the brush. We can resize the brush. So using the brush, we resized it. Let's start with the top right, a little smaller, and with these wires. Go across there, we'll fill those in. We've used the brush now on most of the wires, and poof, most of the wires are gone. Now let's use a smaller brush for these little wires left over. Those ones, resize the brush. There we go. And they're gone now too. Small wires are gone, so we use a smaller brush, so the branches are all still there. Wasn't hard to do in mere seconds. Now, let's do the pole and the last wire. The pole's all green, little larger brush. There we go, and here we go, poof. Now it looks like this photo was taken in an apple orchard. Much better, I'm sure. So as you can see, it's all quite easy. There are two ways that I upload my images. First is the click method. We click on the green box. It'll open a folder for you. You select the folder you want at your file, type in the file name at the bottom, and then click open. There's also the drag file method, which you drag the file onto the green box. In this example, you would open a new window of File Explorer. Select your file with your mouse, and then simply drag with your mouse the file you have to the other window into the green box. Before you know it, you'll be editing your photo. Nothing to it. So, if you're a photo editing pro, you can use your professional program. This won't be for you. It won't be your top choice for editing photos. But I'm no pro. I'm comfortable with 720 photo quality. These photographs are not super top quality, but they're great for me, and they fit my printer very well. Now, CleanUp Pictures can allow you to pay an extra fee of $3 to $5 a month. I do not suggest that. I don't pay that. I wouldn't pay that. At that point, get your own program. But it works quick, easy, it's free. Hope you enjoy it. That's all, folks. Thank you very much. And I've got just one more thing here. That's a website. The website is cleanup.pictures. And then lastly, I'd like to thank all the dogs in this presentation and my human friend also. I'd like to mention that Chris shared in November the DALL-E 2. And most of the dogs you've seen in this presentation were created using the DALL-E 2 OpenAI. It's a text-to-image generator. Anyway, thank you, Walter, buddy.
Hey, we do have some questions, Bob. One is, can you go back if you made a mistake? So I would guess Control-Z. Does that work to back up, or do you have to start over?
There's a redo arrow in there. Let's see. Hope it's in there. There's a back arrow in there. There's also a tab. I didn't show it in there. I'm sorry. There's a redo arrow. There's also a button. I didn't screenshot the whole screen. A button. As you're doing this, you can review your previous photo or the original back and forth or under your last action. A magnifier is in there also. If you're doing the branches, if you want to do the branches, you can magnify your screen closer and get right in there. It's all very quick, though.
Can you go back multiple times? So say you do a couple of swipes, and then can you back up through multiple erasures, or is it just the last one that you're able to do?
I can go back a few of them. I did some first presentation. I had to do a few of them just to different screenshots. You can go back somewhere. I didn't count how many. You can go back, yes, for sure.
Okay.
Don't use the back arrow on your webpage, just the the arrow on the an undo arrow.
Yeah. Was a question from Karen to Linda and I. How does this compare to Photoscape X? Linda says, very impressive. Seems you can do larger areas more smoothly than in Photoscape X, so quicker. One thing I had a question about, too, is I don't know if you played with it. When you, like it does fill in with stuff that is realistic in the background. Now, if it doesn't get it quite right, can you go over it again and it'll do something different? Or
I have done a few photographs with people in a fairly busy restaurant in the background, people in the background, and it fills it in quite nicely. If you were really precise, you might realize that that picture frame wouldn't be quite the same shape that it filled in. So it's very close, but if you want to have two people or so in a restaurant, you want to photograph and highlight, they will stand out and it'll take the rest of people out of there. It's powerful, quick, and easy.
Yeah, I just wonder if you're not happy with what it did, if you go over it a second time, does it do something different?
It does do that. And I found it's different if you use a heavier brush a couple of times, it might give a different thing than one brush and a small thing. So you can go at it a couple of angles, yes.
Okay. Bill asks if he puts a green brush over his wife, will she disappear too? Yeah, that'll happen. Bill also asks, can you save the cutout? There isn't really a cutout. What it's doing is it's just overlaying on top of your image. So it's not really cutting it out. It's just adding content over top. So there wouldn't be any way to save what's being cut out or being replaced.
Then you download your file. I might mention there's no sign up required. You don't need to put your password or your email address in. Just go to the website. Actually, on the website, I didn't show that either. You go to the website, you don't have your own picture. The website cleanup.pictures will have you three or four pictures, use their pictures, and play with it online. So you really don't even have to use your own picture.
Yeah. Carol asks, can it do black and white? So it's not that it's editing the photo. It will not convert to black and white, but you can very easily use something like Photoscape X, which is free, to convert to black and white. Just about any photo editor will allow you to do conversions to black and white.
Unless she's asking, can it do the smart erase in a black and white image?
Oh, with that it would be able to do, yeah. Yeah,
I think
for sure.
So, yes.
Yeah. One thing I'd just like to comment on, for me, it's a severe limitation to say that the maximum resolution download is going to be 720 pixels. To me, that's really, really low Now, as say, if all you're doing is displaying it on the web or something like that, 720 pixels is probably fine. You know, we talk about in digital cameras and that, that, you know, the bare minimum now on any sort of camera, even phones, would be something probably talking about 12 megapixel. Well, you know, in here, you're talking about less than a megapixel. So it's really low resolution. You have to realize that. And I think that it's an outrageous cost that they have at $3 to $5 a month in order to get original resolution. Or actually, I'm not even sure they do original resolution, but it is higher resolution if you pay money. But that's outrageously expensive. In 1 year, you could pay for, you know, professional photo editing program that will allow you to do very similar capabilities plus, you know, tons and tons and tons of more things. But it is pretty impressive what they're doing in terms of what they're filling in. It looks to be a very realistic replacement that they're doing. So good on them to do it. Bob Gallant says unlimited resolution for $3 a month.
Yeah, I wouldn't pay for it either, but I do print a lot of stuff. I do cards and birthday cards and lots of stupid stuff on cardstock, and it works great on that stuff. Really, it does.
Okay, I think that's all the questions. Thanks very much, Bob. That was great.
Thank you.
A lot of kudos in the chat there for you.
Yeah, Bob says, well done, Bob.
I'd like to thank the dog, too.
Yeah, good on the dog, right? Okay, thanks very much. And now we're moving along. We have a share from Chris on the thorny topic of extended warranties.
Yeah, we've actually...
Yeah, sorry, it is working. Yep.
Yep. We've chatted a little bit about this a couple of times, I think, at Q&A, at least once, maybe a couple of times, about extended warranties, are they really worth it or not. The first point I've got on this slide is that there are companies out there, Best Buy, I'm looking at you, they make a lot of money on selling extended warranties. And you cannot buy something in Best Buy without being offered an extended warranty. And if you ever get one of their surveys, they ask you, were you offered an extended warranty? And I suspect that they go and give hell to any salesperson who doesn't try to sell you an extended warranty. They are expensive. You know, I went and I looked across a number of venues, so both retail stores like Best Buy, The Source, Staples, Canada Computers, and then some of the online manufacturers like HP and Dell and Lenovo and things like that. And generally speaking, the extended warranties, you know, if you wanted to bring it from the one-year manufacturer warranty up to a three-year warranty, you're generally paying between about 15% to 55%. The cost of the computer for that three-year warranty. The less expensive the computer, the higher the percentage is going to be. That 55% was actually at Best Buy, and it was a $200 computer, and they wanted $110 to extend the warranty to 3 years on a $200 computer. I couldn't believe it. As you get into more expensive computers, like you get into a couple of $1,000 computer, you will see it drop down to 15%, or in the case of Best Buy, more likely about 20-25%. And then laptops are typically more expensive than desktop computers, if that's what you're getting an extended warranty on. So whereas a desktop computer might be, you know, typically 15 to 30%, you know, a laptop might be 20 or 25 to 35, 40%. They do vary quite a bit. Personally, I've always found that extended warranties, I found them to be too expensive for me. I found them rarely to be of value to me. I had one on a TV once years ago, never used it. Car, my last Camry, I had $1,700 extended warranty on it. in the extended warranty period. I had one brake adjustment that would have been covered on that, which would have been, you know, under $500 sort of idea. So that definitely wasn't worth it. On computers, I have bought a couple over the years, and I don't think I ever used the extended warranty. The computer I'm using right now, because it was relatively expensive and even the video card alone was worth more than what they wanted for the warranty, I decided to go for it. But I never use it. So, you know, typically, for me personally, I found that they were not really worth it. But then, next, I just bought a Lenovo gaming computer, and it was pretty expensive. The default for the warranty was, this is buying it directly from Lenovo. The default was 1 year, ship it back to Lenovo warranty, and they had a deal on. A 3-year on-site warranty where they'll send somebody out to repair the computer. The regular price on that warranty was $89, which is not bad, but it was even on sale for $75.65. For me, that seemed to be a really inexpensive insurance policy. It came to about 3.1% the cost of the computer, and it went from that 1 year ship it to Lenovo, to a 3-year on-site. And for me, that was actually, I think, worth it. I'll tell you in 3 years if I actually took advantage of it or not, I guess. Next. Now, when they say on-site warranty, and a lot of the manufacturers like Dell, Lenovo, HP, and so forth, they will offer these on-site warranties. And so typically their extended warranties are on-site, but they have no statement about how long it will take for that repair person to actually get to you. They do have, Lenovo has for sure, a more expensive next day option, but as Bob Watcher would be happy to tell you, he had a next business day option, and I think he had one computer that took about 4 months for it to be finally fixed. So it's not necessarily going to mean just because they have on site doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be repaired really fast, but I would guess that on average it's going to be fixed more quickly. This is a quote from their site. If repairs cannot be completed on site, Lenovo sends the device to a local service center for repair replacement, then returns it to you. And again, no guarantee on how long that is actually going to take. And again, as Bob would be happy to tell you, he had a computer that it took about 4 months for him to get it back. So, bear in mind that this is an issue with all of the extended warranties or even the standard warranties about getting it done in a timely fashion. Next. So some of the considerations that I think people should think about is that it really is an insurance policy. And so you have to decide if you would be better off for you to just self-insure it by basically not taking out anything this. And if something breaks, you end up paying for it. Is that going to be a better deal for you? You're the only one who can really make that assessment, and it's a bit of a crapshoot. Yeah, you're going to guess on it, and sometimes, like, I usually guess wrong, and whenever I've bought extended warranties, I guessed wrong. So you also have to look at how long you're willing to be without your computer or you can afford to be. If you're a business, you know, how long can you afford to be without that computer? If you have that, ship it back to the manufacturer, those are going to typically be the longest time frames that are going to be there. And most of them will say that expected time frames are up to 6 weeks. When you have to ship it back to the, manufacturer to get it fixed. When you go to a store like Best Buy and so forth, they will typically end up doing at least some troubleshooting and repairs in the store, but often they will have to end up shipping it back. Even if you've got an extended warranty through Best Buy or Staples or whatever, they may have to ship it back to the manufacturer as well to get it fixed in the end run. So you may be no further ahead other than you get the extended time frame on it. I found that in most cases, the ship it back warranties, you have to pay to ship it back to the manufacturer, and then they will pay to return it to you. Shipping it back to the manufacturer can be an expensive proposition. If you have a big desktop computer, that could be a fair amount of money that you end up paying to ship it back to them. And that's where if you have one of those on site where the repairman is going to come out, and if they can't fix it, they take it and they send it for repair on your behalf, you know, you don't end up having to pay any shipping charges one way or another. A good thing to keep in mind is that some credit cards double the manufacturer's warranty automatically. And I think, I'm not sure. I shouldn't talk out of turn on that because I'm not sure which do that. But I know that there are some credit cards that will just automatically double the manufacturer's warranty. Again, that's going to be you ship it to the manufacturer and they ship it back to you when it's fixed. But at least you get the extended time. Bob Walker pointed out to me that Costco doubles the manufacturer's warranty on most electronics goods. And so that's something to keep in mind that maybe you don't need any other extended warranty, that maybe doubling the manufacturer's warranty is going to be good enough for you. I have found that prices vary wildly. And so if you are interested in manufacturer's warranty or the extended warranties, and even if you're not interested, take a look because go to every sales outlet. So you can buy a Lenovo computer from Best Buy, from Future Shop, or not Future Shop, Staples, Canada Computers, or you can buy it directly from them. So check every outlet, see what the price is on the unit itself, and see what their extended warranties are and you know how much they cost. Check every make and model. Don't assume that a desktop computer is 15% the cost of the computer. No. You can look at two models and it'll be wildly different prices for the extended warranty on something that is worth the same amount of money. It's just crazy. And check out the terms and conditions on all of these. If you're interested in extended warranty, make sure that you know what it is that you're buying, because the terms and conditions on it will vary considerably from one option to another. And that's all I had to say on that. I welcome anybody who wanted to chime in with their personal experiences or recommendations or thoughts on extended warranties.
Well, I think you've hit a nerve here. There's a whole bunch of stuff in the chat. Now, Bill Van Dyke says that a Best Buy sales guy told him that warranties are a great deal. The company loses lots of money on it.
Yeah.
He seems a little skeptical. He said, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that they lose money on warranties, that's for sure. They might lose it on, an individual unit, but overall, they make a bundle of money on this.
Natalie wants to know if your extended warranty was with Lenovo itself or with a store.
Yeah, mine was with Lenovo itself. So it was through their website. They had a pretty good deal on the computer itself. It was 25% off a regular price, which was outrageously expensive. So that brought it down to what I thought was a good price on it to have that 25% off. And then I couldn't turn down that warranty. I figured they, when I'm going to be spending $2,500 on a computer, to spend just another little bit to get that extended warranty with on-site service and things like that, to me it was worth it. I didn't see anywhere else buying a Lenovo computer that could offer that sort of deal on the extended warranty.
Chris?
Tom yep. notes that...
Timothy?
Oh, sorry. Wouldn't some warranties only go on a computer as long as it's not been touched by you, if you upgraded something inside it?
I have not seen any conditions placed on it like that, but that's not to say that it doesn't exist that way, but certainly on the Lenovo that I just bought, they actually list user serviceable parts in it. And so you can go in and they have right in the manual user serviceable parts for M.2 drives, for 2.5-inch and 3.5-inch SATA drives, for memory, for video card, even the CPU. So those are all considered to be user serviceable, so they are not out of the realm of something that it won't void your warranty if you go in and doing those specific things. They did have a concierge service where for people who did not want to open up the computer, and I forget what it was about $50 for the period of the extended warranty, where if you wanted to upgrade a part, if you buy the part through them, which are inflated prices, they would have a person show up with the part and put it into the computer for you. And so for anybody who didn't want to go to the trouble themselves or nervous about opening up the computer, that was an option as well. But you'd have to buy their parts, which are crazy expensive. They wanted, like, for a 2-terabyte SATA drive, They wanted like $200. Well, I can get them for like $60. So some of the prices were kind of outrageous, but that was an option. But no, for in this particular case, I know that it wouldn't void the warranty. But that's one of those things where I say the last point on the slide there, check the terms and conditions, because make sure you know what it is you're buying, because you can be spending a significant amount of money on these extended warranties.
So, Chris, Tom notes that the credit card double warranties are usually limited to an additional year or two.
Yeah, which I guess would be, it makes sense because they're only extending the standard warranty, and I don't know anybody who's offering on computer electronics. I've never seen anything beyond a 1 year. So them credit card doubling it to 2 years sort of makes sense. But I guess that could be a caution if you're buying it with a manufacturer's warranty that is 3 years and the credit card only extends it for 1 year or 2 years or something like that. Yeah, that could be a consideration. Yeah, interesting.
And Linda points out that the value of insurance is not if you got your money back, but if you slept well.
That's true too. So there's a certain value to just the feeling of pacifying any anxiety over the fact that this could die. One thing I often thought of though about extended warranties, I thought if you're going to have something die on you, it is more likely that it is going to die pretty quickly, I think. So if a computer lasts for a year without any difficulties, it's probably going to go for quite a few more years without any difficulty. Not to say it always will, but it's, you know, I think that the things that tend to die quickly. So then you're talking about just whether it's the convenience of, you know, either an in-store where you just haul the computer into them or an on-site from a place like Lenovo or HP or Dell where they'll send somebody to you, or you have to pack it up and ship it off to the manufacturer if there is a problem with it. So, yeah, I mean, these things are all things that you have to weigh what's important to you.
So one of the questions here was what do you think of Costco extended warranty?
I have no idea at all on that because I am not a Costco member, but my understanding is that they are just extending the manufacturer's warranty. I don't know. Actually, Bob Walker, you're on the line. Do you know if Costco actually has service in the store where the manufacturer warranty, you can just bring it into the store and have them take care of it, whatever needs to be done? Or
yeah. I'm not sure about their normal, they'll double the manufacturer's warranty if you buy it there for free, but they have a premium warranty, and on a $1,200 laptop, it cost me $65, and they call it a concierge, warranty, and, it adds a third year, and if anything goes wrong in that 3 year period, you phone up their concierge center. They will courier you a shipping container with a prepaid shipping label, and you get it within a day or two. You ship it back to them, and I got the computer back within a week. And this computer has gone in twice already, and I still got a year and a half left to go. So, you know, for no cost, they take care of the shipping and everything else, cover everything. And for $65 on a $1,200 machine, that's pretty cheap.
Yeah, it's not bad. All you need is one service call for sure, and it's paid for itself for sure.
Yeah, Natalie says that Costco told her they would send the tablet to the manufacturer if it was within the manufacturer's warranty period. And if it was part of the extended period, which was Costco's warranty, they would actually fix or replace it.
Okay.
He says that some manufacturers will void the warranty if a laptop was open for upgrades. Stuart keeps his PCs for 10 years and never had an extended warranty and never needed one. Jeff had a friend where a hinge broke on a laptop, took it in under extended warranty, and was told that physical damage must have been caused by negligence. So it wasn't covered. Go away and don't bother us. Intel offers a 2-year warranty on NUC laptops. And Jeff says he agrees that it's absolutely right. You're absolutely right. If it's going to die, it's going to happen early. It's a high infant mortality rate. Karen thinks that the Costco warranties are awesome, plus the concierge service, so maybe she had good success.
Anybody who had something that had a problem within the extended warranty period and paid for it is going to think it's wonderful because, of course, all you need is one thing go wrong. And unless you're in the case where you're getting, you know, paying 55% of the cost of the computer for an extended warranty, it'll turn out that it was worth it. If you have just one problem, typically will make it worthwhile. It's just I very rarely have had even one problem within the extended warranty period.
Okay, well, thank you, Christy. Lots of questions there, lots of discussion. So we're in that last 10-minute period. If anybody has any other questions, you can ask them now. Or if you want to continue with the extended warranty discussion, then feel free to open your mic and let's chat. Eve says you get a 90-day return, no questions asked on computers that you buy at Costco.
That's not bad. I mean, a lot of places will be 30 days return, no questions asked. There are some places that they don't want to see that come back in the door even a day later. As sales are final. So, yeah, you really have to watch what it is you're buying, what the conditions are in terms of conditions.
Hi, it's Corrine, Chris. Just a couple of things that come to mind. You put your devices on a surge protector bar.
Mine is on a power bar. It's not. I don't know if it has any surge suppression at all.
Okay, it's just because if something happens, right? Are they going to try to argue with you to say, well, you know, there was a power surge or whatever? The other question that I have just in general is that your insurance, your content or homeowner's insurance, last time I checked mine, I mean, it doesn't cover, it depends on what you pay for your devices, right? I mean, it doesn't cover it. So if you were to have like in the derecho, you had some damage or something, would that warranty cover, you know, something happening like water damage or... So it's the warranty versus the insurance replacement is what comes to my mind. It's just a general observation. I don't need an answer. It's just for people to consider when they're looking at costs and looking at replacement.
Yeah, I would think on average, surge suppression and things like that probably is not covered under most warranties if they can prove that. This was really an electrical surge. It's something that happened outside of the computer itself. They're really covering for breakdowns of anything within the computer. And an electrical surge, I think most manufacturers will consider it to be outside of the realm of what they cover. Certainly water damage would be outside of the realm of what they cover, I would think, under most circumstances. Certainly it's worth trying. If you do have some problem like that, going to them and saying like, yeah, here it is, and who knows, maybe they will cover it. I had really good luck with HP on one of my laptops that I had a problem with. It was outside of the warranty period, and they gave me a really, really good price on repairing this computer. And so some manufacturers are better than others, and I think some manufacturers in some circumstances might be better than in other circumstances. So it's a little bit of a crapshoot on that front as well. But, yeah. surge suppressors is always not a bad idea. I mean, it's a circuit within the power bar that will give up the ghost under an electrical surge, so you will lose the power bar rather than your computer. Another thing a lot of people will go for is an uninterruptible power supply, which will usually offer some kind of surge suppression, as well as the fact that your computer won't unceremoniously just go off when you have power flickers or things like that. It'll pick up the slack on that, and so you won't have your computer crash on you. And some of them may even have software that come where if there is an interruption in power, they keep the power going and they trigger a shutdown on the computer, so it does a proper shutdown rather than just crashing.
Yeah, you have to be careful how much joules they say they protect. Some,
yeah,
have a little bit and some have a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, and in most cases, what I would suggest is don't plug your printer into things like that. You don't need your printer in the case of a power outage. You know, have it just the computer and the monitor are the only things that are protected. And if it doesn't cover both of those, have it cover just the computer and forego the monitor even. But, yeah, they definitely have different ratings and different capabilities on there.
And your backup drive.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. You don't want your computer and your backup drive to get fried.
Well, your backup drive shouldn't be plugged into your computer all the time anyway.
Well, I argue about that. Because I do nightly backups. I'm not going to unplug and plug in my backup drive every day.
But I happen to know that's not your only backup drive, right?
No, that's true. I do have an off-site backup that gets done at least once a month.
What about those NAS drives? You know, you have two drives the same, but one backups the other?
Yeah, in a great many cases, really what you're protecting on there is failure of one of those drives. But because they are mirrored, if you have a problem on one, it will often get replicated immediately to the other and cause you if it's a data corruption problem or something like that, it'll replicate that corruption to the other drive. Right. So it really is protection against failure of a single drive.
Okay, well, moving along, we've run out of our hour here. So I didn't notice anybody new on the call when I looked earlier, but if there is anybody who's not already a member, or if there's a member here who has a friend who'd like to become a member, just remind you that we have a special offer right now of 2-for-1, where if you buy a 1-year membership for $20, we're actually going to give you a second year's membership absolutely free. So you really do get 2 years for the price of one. Next week is our regular monthly meeting, February the 8th, and it's all about how to get paid software for free. So Serge Eric will be covering all those bases on the 8th. And because of that, because it's a regular meeting, it means that we won't have any Q&A that night. So our next Q&A session will actually be in 2 weeks on February the 15th, so that gives you lots of time to think up your questions and topics that you'd like to share with the group and send your thoughts into suggestion box at opcug.ca. And thanks for attending tonight. Hope you enjoyed it. Clearly, Chris's warranty thing was a great success. So we'll see you next week at the regular meeting. Bye now.
Alan was skeptical on the extended warranty topic. Thanks for showing up, folks, and we'll see you at the regular monthly meeting next week.
I'm like Stuart. I have no use for extended warranties.
Yeah, I know. I've spent so much money on extended warranties that